Welcome to issue 8 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that killed Gwen Stacy. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
Feeling murderous, David.
Did you do the reading assignment?
I did indeed, and God, it was a good one.
Yeah, it was. We'll come back to that a little bit later.
And just as a preview, we're doing Powers this week, people. Brian Michael Bendis is Powers. Okay.
Sorry, did I tell you I'm really tired?
What?
I'm tired and you're sick. This ought to be a fun show.
This is going to be even more fun than that time that we just lost it and rode llamas around for half an hour.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And David's got his soundboard.
And I've got new sounds.
Talk about an impending crisis.
But you know, this show we are going to just back off. We've got an audience that he's trying to take control of the mouse. But this show we do a lot of news, don't we?
We certainly do a lot of news.
Best investigator reporting on the planet.
Absolutely.
It certainly is. I knew that was coming.
I had to find a segue.
Oh, you're the master of the segue, David. And speaking of segues, let's talk about what we've been reading.
Absolutely. Why don't you tell me what you've been reading?
Well, apart from this week's featured story that we're doing this week, which is, of course, Powers by the ubiquitous Brian Michael Bendis, I've been steadily catching up on the New 52, trying to get through everything up to issue 4, up to whatever the current issues are. But because you were raving about it last week, Batman the Widening Gyre.
Oh, yes.
I read the 6 issues through. Now, I'd started reading this. I don't know why I stopped for whatever reason, but I never got to the conclusion of issue 6.
Now, let's just remind people very quickly that I said on last week's show that I finished reading the 6 issues and the last page, which is like 3 panels, completely took me off guard.
And I can see why.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, should we, now that I've read it, and as we say in every issue, spoilers are plenty.
I think we can do this. Look, it's spoiler time.
The previous book that we reviewed way back in issue 2, 3.
Cacophony.
Testing my memory now. We did previously on the show, we've looked in depth at Kevin Smith's Batman Cacophony.
Absolutely.
Which, of course, introduced a character called Onomatopoeia. Well, didn't introduce the character.
God, I'm glad you said that. I can't
have brought back the character of Onomatopoeia, who had previously been in Green Arrow arc called The Sounds of Violence. Mm. Now, Kevin Smith did the second arc called Batman the Widening Gyre, same writer, same art team. Didn't seem to be, even though it was another Batman story, didn't seem initially connected to Batman Cacophony, but it turns out it was a little bit connected.
It was, and that last page was the connection. And, you know, I don't think we want to go into super spoilers here. We're going to talk a little bit about it by saying that, you know, it is connected, and there is, I mean, that we're bringing back that character again. But I think when the next 6 issues come out, we want to make this a featured book.
Oh, absolutely.
We want to go into this in detail because it is, once again, it's a really well-written book. Kevin Smith knows how to write. But you made the point before the show when you said you're reading it and you actually start, you get lulled into this sense of false security because you're reading it going, she's such a nice girl. It's like a romance novel.
You know? I was so far into that book that when the shocking conclusion came, I actually said, oh, my God.
Yeah, I think you said something else.
You know, I actually gasped out loud. You know?
I think you said something else, but we don't carry the explicit tag.
Yes, exactly right. What I texted David, we can't say because...
But you get the point.
Yes, exactly right. But, look, I've also been reading a lot of the New 52 ones. I think we've mentioned this before, stuff that I think that I'm going to drop. It's fairly clear now. I'm still disappointed with Green Arrow. I can't get into it.
I think it's issue 3. Is it issue 3 when he's fighting that, like the gang? And they've got him on camera. Is that 2 or 3?
That was issue 3. And for some reason, I just thought, oh, we've seen this all before. It's the whole technology thing, you know, broadcasting crimes online. I just found the story so disappointing from the same writer who did that great concluding series to Green Arrow before the reboot. And it just seems like, unfortunately, Green Arrow is one of the people who's suffered in this, and that they've had to reinvent the character. And he's a little bit too much like a Batman clone now.
He's definitely not the only one who suffered, though. We'll talk about that in a second.
No, because he's got the kind of Oracle-like sort of team looking after him.
And it's almost as though
they've taken Oracle out of the DCU because Barbara Gordon's now Batgirl again. And, you know, they've got the Birds of Prey are doing their own thing. They're all wanted criminals. So they've kind of sandwiched it into the next degree of separation because Black Canary used to work with Green Arrow. And they've made him this kind of character who's got this double life. And he's kind of like his playboy by day, crime fighter by night.
And
sounds
the problem I have is that the female character who's like his Oracle is kind of like street smart and, you know, quick-witted. And it's like you sit there going, it's all just a little bit stereotyped.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. But it also sort of almost, it's like another backdoor Batman book when there's already 1,700 Batman books in the new 52. Obviously not 1,700 because there is...
No, but out of the 52, there's 51 Batman books and a Green Arrow book.
Pretty much. No, but I mean, there are seven, I think, Superman books as well. But let's just quickly recap. There's Batgirl, Batman, Batman the Dark Knight, Batman and Robin, Batwing, Batwoman, Birds of Prey, Catwoman, we forgot before when we were talking before the show, Detective Comics.
And then don't forget all the Robin books.
So there's Nightwing. Yeah. And yes, Red Hood and the Outlaws.
And Teen Titans, which is the other
and
Robin.
And Teen Titans.
All the Robins have their own book now.
That's right. Yeah. So that's a lot of books. I lost count in that, but there's a lot of books there.
Now, not to forget that the Penguin has also just started in his own miniseries.
That's right. So
that's just started.
And there's a Huntress miniseries
as well.
And
there's a new Batman miniseries, Batman Odyssey. Yep.
Well, there you go.
So there's another one for you.
they're not suffering for Bat books, and understandably, it's the biggest character they've got in cross media as well, because the new Batman movie coming out next year is going to be massive. Mm. There's a conscious attempt in some of these books to actually make them very Batman, very Christopher Nolan like. The strongest one, we were talking about this before the show, I think, is just the one called Batman.
Absolutely.
Which is written by Scott Snyder.
Brian Michael Bendis. No, sorry.
Brian Michael Bendis. Jeff Johns. And to me, it's the strongest one because it's just dealing with a very Batmanish story of there's this secret organization who use owls as their symbol. And it's just, it seems to be part of old Gotham, and it throws back to the history of Gotham, which you're kind of getting a bit of that as well in...
And you know what it is? He's actually being a detective.
And he's being a detective. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
He's being... They make a few jokes in there about him being the world's greatest detective, but it is the only book that feels like old school Batman to me, and that's the Bat book I want to read, which is why I think I'm having a few problems with getting into Justice League, because it's still that formation of a team that I know I'm not the target audience there, but I'm wanting to read the characters that I've known for all these years. And this is the problems I'm now having, is that I've got these books that are telling me things that are new because they're recasting the universe, but at the same time, I'm already used to Superman when he's the shining beacon of American hope. You know, he's... I don't want to see a Superman who's a little bit emo.
And quite frankly, I'm actually having a little bit of trouble keeping up with the Superman titles because of the different time zones.
And that's the only one that's confused me. At least all the Bat books seem to have, for the most part, a cohesive history throughout them.
That's right. Whereas Action Comics is 10 years in the past. Justice League is 5 years in the past.
Oh, we forgot Justice League, which is technically another Bat book, but anyway.
Yeah, that's true. And Justice League International, he's in that as well.
There you go. So you're right, 51 books plus Green Arrow.
That's exactly right. Actually, no, it's probably more like 40 Batman books, 10 Superman books.
And Green Arrow
and Aquaman.
Yeah, well, look, Aquaman, again, is one of the surprise hits of the summer. I'm going to say that there's a few that I'm going through quickly here. Look, Hawk and Dove, I don't care about. They've just announced that they're going to... The current writer is dropping out, and Rob Liefeld, everybody's the guy that everybody loves to hate, I guess, is who's doing the art, is also going to be taking over the writing of that. So let's see how long that will last.
Yeah, look, I predict Hawk and Dove will actually die sometime in 2012. Not the characters, the book. I think the book will be phased out. I think Frankenstein, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. will be phased out because I just can't see it being a hit.
Voodoo
will be... Well, Voodoo's such a limited concept. How long can they keep this going? Although Green Lantern just made the Kyle Rayner Green Lantern just made a guest appearance in issue 4, which felt desperate to me.
It's kind of like, you know, we better get these Kyle Rayner fans going somewhere. Let's get them to one of our weakest books possible.
Yeah, because let me tell you, he's the star of the New Guardians, and the New Guardians has left me really cold too, because the cover promised so much on that. It felt like the one of each of the colored lanterns, we're going to come together and be the New Guardians. But so far, we're 4 issues in, and the Guardians, the old Guardians, are still around. You know? And all the lanterns can't seem to stop fighting with each other. So what the hell is this book even about?
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you. And it's I do like what's happening with Birds of Prey. I like the idea that they're all outlaws now. As someone who's read... And to me, that's good because it actually continued on from the story I was already reading. So as someone who's read all 100 and something issues of Birds of Prey,
there's been some interesting little books. And that I think that's the big surprise. Like Aquaman was a real surprise.
Animal Man was mine.
Animal Man was for you. Red Hood and the Outlaws was for me. I thought, what the hell is this book? And absolutely loved it.
I was already on board for that because I'm a big fan of Arsenal/Red Arrow anyway. Because he's obviously been associated with Green Arrow all these years. But yeah, for it to be that funny, it just took me by surprise.
I'm really kind of digging the complete reworking and reboot of Teen Titans, because that is actually a reboot. You know, one of the problems, Cameron brought this up last week, which is this, and we've talked about it before as well, which is this complete reboot of the DC Universe, which isn't really a reboot, only on about half the books is it a reboot, and the other ones are still continuing, but they've changed a few. It's very confusing. And
do you think there'll be a convergence point at some point?
Well, I don't know. I'm still feeling like the woman in red's got to come into this at some point.
So. Yeah, like at issue 12, they all just tie together.
Yeah, or something's going to happen. Something's going to give. But Teen Titans is a true reboot. It's not, because it was always traditionally Dick Grayson as Nightwing as the leader, but this is actually a different Robin as the leader. Wonder Girl has been completely recreated. She's a completely different character. And there's all these new characters involved. And you kind of go, this is kind of hot. I kind of like this, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a good looking book. It's I've only read the first 2 issues, I think, so I'm not up to date with that.
It feels a bit odd not having Starfire in Teen Titans.
Yeah, she's over in the
she's in Red Hood and the Outlaws.
And the Outlaws, of course. I'll cope with that, but she's great in that.
And she's great. I mean, they've completely reinvented her character too, which is kind of fun. But yeah, look, and I was kind of digging Animal Man, I was with you, but I've just caught up with all the Swamp Things that are going on, and at the moment the Swamp Things, because DC's getting into this weird mythology at the moment about the red and the black and the green, and you know, and quite literally that's what they're called. Animal Man, I don't even know what the red is. What is it, the blood of the earth or something like that?
Something like that.
And the green is like the plants of the earth, and the black is the rot, right? And they're... Swamp Thing is going into the whole the green and the black thing. You've got Animal Man going to red. And it's kind of like I was digging Animal Man, but now Swamp Thing has kind of made me turn off of it a little bit because I'm kind of going, this is all just too weirdo for me. You know, this
I
is
see
all,
where you're going, but I just
like... It's all kind of new age hippie for me. You
know? it's just that I am a new age hippie, but I do like the artwork on Animal Man. I didn't expect to like it that much because when I think the first issue, you're presented with a wall of text as your first page, and then... slowly get in there. And it's like that thing we were talking about with the widening guy. I'm liking this family. I sort of got to like them very quickly. Yeah. And then when we go into all that, it's really dark. I don't know. It felt a little bit like Sandman to me, those first few issues of...
And the daughter is great.
Sorry, what was that? The first arc.
The daughter is great.
The daughter is fantastic. I just felt like, you know, it's a writer who's kind of finding his way into the universe. And I said this to you earlier today, I think. I mean, this is Jeff Lemire. I don't know any of his other work. I don't know what else he's done in the comics world. But to me, he's sort of this world that's kind of he's creating is one that is clearly this is just one of those sort of half reboot things where it's not going into brand new territory because it is clearly picking up from an existing story. But at the same time, it's kind of by issue two, it's kind of turning around and saying, everything you knew about Animal Man, forget it.
Well, they kind of had, it would have been a real shame had they rebooted it completely. And this is one of those situations where, like with Green Lantern, they didn't reboot Green Lantern either. That continues on, right? In fact, on some issues, they actually say volume five. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they are actually continuing on. But with Animal Man, here was a character who a few years ago was literally dead in the water. He was a has-been nothing character that nobody wanted anything to do with. Grant Morrison reinvented that character in that very successful run of whatever it was, 30 issues or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it would be a shame to have thrown that out. So they've kept that, you know, and they've kept a lot of that. But you're right. They've just turned it on its head. I can dig what they're doing there. I can dig that, you know?
No, and I really like that. Look, but the thing is, I mean, we'll probably need to move on, but suffice it to say there are a few that took us by surprise. And if you want a really quick way of glancing over everything that's come out, just this week or last week, they brought out the New 52 hardcover compilation.
Oh, yeah. I've got it up on screen right now. Oh, no, where is it? I had it up on screen. Here it is. I've got it up on screen right now.
I haven't got a copy of this yet, but my God, it looks magnificent. It's 1,200 pages, people, hardcover.
Glossy
pages, that's right.
Beautiful. Just for those who are interested, it is actually larger than your average comic book. They have the dimensions here. Where is it? They said that the dimensions of the hardbook are 11.2 by 7.4 by 2.9 inches. It makes it bigger than an actual comic. So all the panels are actually enlarged. And as this article goes to point out, it gives you that experience of seeing every detail that little bit more clearly. Like the woman in red.
It weighs 7.6 pounds.
Oh, that's a heavy book. I wouldn't want to have that mailed in from overseas.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's got a it's going to cost a bit, but it's I think it's a must own. You know,
it's going to be too heavy to read.
But it's going to look good on your bookshelf.
But it will look great on your bookshelf, and you'll be able to treasure it. I mean, it's gorgeous. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. It's a quick way of glancing over what you think you might want to read. We decided fairly quickly after issue one, but I think now that we're three or four issues in, here we are, we're over a quarter of the way through the first year of the New 52. I think it's safe to say it's been a pretty successful reboot, but not everything's worked.
No, look, it's been a very interesting experiment is what it's been. Mm. And I think if DC plays their cards right at this point, they're basically owning the comic book arena at the moment because everybody's still fascinated by it. If they can hold that fascination, they can hold the arena for a while.
And look, we've spent a lot of time talking about it over the last couple of weeks. And I think we'll let it go for a while and we'll come back to the New 52 when it's less new.
I have one thing to say, though, about all the series. I caught up with Swamp Thing. I'd like to point out that we're four issues into Swamp Thing and there's been no Swamp Thing. There is a problem there, right?
Yeah.
We've spent four issues of him basically going, I don't want to be that monster again.
Right.
You know, so you sit there and go, all right, I'm getting bored. You know, bored now. Let's move on.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, look, I think we should. This is something we obviously need to cover because it is the biggest comic event of the year. And next year we're going to have some pretty major events, but something we'll definitely keep coming back to as we go on. But we've got a little bit of other news, so we should probably move swiftly along.
Yeah, I'm just going to say very quickly before we go on in what we've been reading, I finished Joker. The Brian Azzarello,
The
Brian Azzarello graphic novel. It is awesome. This is really worth having a look at. It's actually made me very excited for Batman Noel for next week. It is so exceptionally well written and well drawn that I finished it and I just put it down and kind of went, I need to read that again. You know?
I started having a look at it, but I had to get into this week's pick. But it is a beautiful looking book.
It is a beautiful looking book and it's a great read. Really well written. So worth having a look at. And maybe we might actually make it a featured book at some point down the track.
I see what you mean that they've really based him on the look of Heath Ledger too.
Well, and as Cameron pointed out last week, it is so easy to think about every one of these villains because we actually see Riddler, we see Killer Croc, and you can imagine them all in Nolan's world. They're actually done in this very realistic way.
Definitely be reading that.
Yeah, no, it's very good. It's a really exceptional book. And as I say, Batman Noel. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good about this. So
excellent.
All right, let's go into some news.
What a scoop!
Yes.
Well, it's a very buoyant theme, but we've got a bit of sad news this week.
You've pulled some pretty depressing articles here.
Look, the thing is, I mean, I couldn't let this. There wasn't a lot of major stuff that happened this week, but two stories that were a bit depressing this week. The first thing is Joe Simon, who was one of the co-creators of Captain America, has died at the age of 98. Now, if you don't know the name Joe Simon, there's no reason you necessarily would. He was probably one of the biggest figures in the golden age of comics. He was an editor back on Timely Comics, which was the former company that became Marvel.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he co-created Captain America, which is probably his biggest claim to fame. And I'd say that that's if you only do one thing in your life, then that's probably a good thing to
get. It's not a bad legacy to pass on, let me tell you.
Absolutely. And you know, and they talk in the, well, most of the articles that they talk about, they say the very first issue of Captain America had him famously punching out Adolf Hitler. Yes. A full year before America even entered the war. So, you know, and he went on to create a few other things. He created Fighting American, which was one of the first creator-owned properties in industry history.
Right.
And
that's funny you say that, considering the book we're doing is our review.
Yeah, well, that's right.
We'll come back to that.
Absolutely. And in 1959, he paired up with Jack Kirby and debuted The Fly, part of Archie's superhero imprint Red Circle Comics. So he's had a – and, you know, he kept working in the in 1960, he founded a magazine that was a competitor to Mad Magazine called Sick. I've never heard of it.
But I haven't either, because the big competitor to Mad I always knew about was Cracked.
Cracked, yeah. Well, apparently this ran for 20 years. So, look, he's had a long legacy. In 99, he was inducted into the Will Eisner Hall of Fame. So he was a well-respected comic book creator, artist, and all-around American comics legend, really.
Yeah, I'm actually glad that he lived long enough to see that Captain America movie.
Yeah, look, now, you know, he's... It's kind of full circle for him. He created that at the dawn of the Second World War for America, and here we are, you know, almost seven decades later, or over seven decades later, and he's, you know, his creation has been turned into,
very successful,
one of the biggest motion pictures of the year. So, look, you know, great legacy for him. Now, the other sad bit of news we had this week was, of course, Eduardo Barreto passed away as well at the age of 57. Now, most recently, he was on the Judge Parker newspaper strip, which I wasn't familiar with. Mm. But what I was familiar with was his work in the 80s on New Teen Titans, which was a lot of people. That was one of the biggest books for DC in the 80s, the New Teen Titans.
And he was actually responsible for the time, which was probably one of my favorite periods of Teen Titans as well.
It was during the Marv Wolfman kind of period of thing. So, along with I think it's George Perez and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. He was probably one of the more famous people to do an extended run on that. He also did comics like Superman, Action Comics, Shadow Strikes, and Martian Manhunter. And his son, in fact, is actually an artist at Boom Studios who does
Irredeemable.
Irredeemable.
One of my favorite comic books, actually.
There you go. And he also filled in for a week on Judge Parker. Right. And his daughter, Andrea, is a colorist. So, yeah, he may have died this week, but he certainly left behind him a massive legacy in the comic book industry.
Yeah,
and,
John,
you know, obviously...
57 is very young.
Yeah, very young, 57. I'm not quite sure what his cause of death was. It's this article isn't specific, but you know, he contracted meningitis last year, but the details of his death are still unknown.
Right.
So another sad comic book death too this week, and it was a shame to lose such a great comic book artist so young, but. You know, we've still got his works, and they are some excellent works.
Agreed. Do we have any happy news?
Look, we do. We have one other bit of news I pulled out this week was that Marvel plans more season one graphic novels next year, and I pulled this off Comic Vine.
This actually amused me when I fired this up because of the titles.
Yeah, well, look, the three titles that they've pulled out, they've already done some previous ones. They did Daredevil, X-Men, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man in September. They came out. Mm. And that weren't surprising because they were all kind of the major players in the first couple of years of Marvel, and also they are, with the exception of Captain America, they are probably, and the Avengers, of course, they are the biggest players in the Marvel U. Mm. So the next crop of characters that they've chosen are really interesting because they're not major players in the Marvel U, with the exception of the Hulk, who's one of them.
Yeah.
He's an obvious one because Hulk's making another cinematic comeback next year with the Avengers.
And a TV series.
And the TV series, of course. Now, but the other two are interesting not only because of their choices, but because they might be indicative of the next films. They are, of course, Doctor Strange and Ant-Man, both of which, if you've been following the Marvel Cinematic Universe news for a while, are the two scripts that have been kicking around for a while looking for a home.
Well, Ant-Man is, in particular, is Edgar Wright. So.
That's right. Yeah. And look, you know, they're all... And apparently Doctor Strange did come up earlier this year in serious talks, so... I would not be surprised, and there are two unspecified Marvel movies that I think that are floating around. And I forgot Kevin Feige. I think
Feige.
I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his name. He actually announced earlier this year that the next after the Avengers, we would be kicking into a second movie leading up to a second run of movies leading up to a second Avengers film
with a new lineup,
and they've mentioned a few things like Guardians of the Galaxy and so forth, but of course there will be a few other new heroes kicking in there too. So I wouldn't be surprised if these are two of them, Ant-Man at the very least, because with Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright and I think it was Edgar Wright, and there's somebody else who co-wrote it with him.
It might be Joe Cornish, the Attack of the Block guy.
Attack of the Block, yeah, Joe Cornish, who also co-wrote Tintin. They're both pretty hot property right now, so I'm not surprised if that script gets greenlit fairly quickly.
Yeah, a very, very strong possibility. I think that Ant-Man is definitely going to happen. And look, Doctor Strange, this has actually been kicking around for a couple of years now. This year was the first time I've heard some serious words about it, but they've talked about Doctor Strange for a while. And let's not forget, it also was a failed TV pilot or movie in the 70s. So they've tried it before. So
They
are interesting.
I mean, look, Instant Movie Database have already got Doctor Strange listed as a 2013 release. Now, we know they're not the most reliable of people, but...
Yeah, I can put something up on Instant Movie Database.
But the thing is, as we said, it has been kicking around for quite some time. I feel
Universe.
Fairly confident that one of them will be announced probably closer to the time Avengers comes out.
Well, he has been a staple of the Marvel Universe for some time as well.
And he was such a great character when they did that great 90s Spider-Man animated series. They had a really great run of Doctor Strange stuff and that. And I always remember those as being some really strong episodes. And if they can capture that, if they get Doctor Strange right, it could be a fantastic, really big cinematic film. But if they get him wrong, it could be a disaster. Mm. So... they have to play that one careful. So obviously they're waiting for a good script on that one.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of good scripts, we don't know if it has one or not, but I'm just looking for a segue.
Is it time for movie news, Dave?
Well, I was actually about to say, yes, it is time for movie news. And there's something you didn't put in here. So let's just play this really quickly.
Movie news. Little Panda Hopper.
Sorry, I just want to add that in there. you didn't put into your movie news that a brand new trailer actually launched this week for Ghost Rider.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about that in the movie show, so actually.
But we won't be now because we're not doing any movie news this week.
That's true. There was a new trailer for Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance out this week.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah.
I actually really want to see it.
Can I just slice that while nobody's listening?
Yeah, while nobody's listening, because I mean,
I really want to see it.
The first one isn't great, You know what I mean? But had, you know, had some moments here and there, but it wasn't great. This actually looks like a lot of fun.
This looks like, I can't remember who said it this week, but someone said this looks like the Fast Five of superhero movies.
Look, it's Neville Dean and Taylor. These guys
it looks so good.
These are the guys who made the Crank movies. I'm going to play a little bit of the trailer here. I've actually got it. So,
oh, good.
Let's play a little bit of this and just have a little listen. We may not play the whole thing, but we'll have a little listen to the beginning of this. I wonder if there's actually the green thing at the beginning, you know, the thing.
The thread is your guys,
it's
the latest star styles.
Oh, man. Don't you hate...
It's a different movie to the one I saw.
I hate pre-roll ads. I really do. They just kind of jump in there when you're not expecting them. But so I'm just letting the pre-roll ad out. That's why I'm talking.
Yeah, well, look, we all know that the first Ghost Rider film was not the greatest film.
No, here we go. Here it is.
There's good and bad in all of us. It doesn't matter how far you run. There are some demons you just can't escape.
I need your help. This child is in danger.
Daddy! I don't save people.
If you don't help, the devil will have a new form, one more powerful than he's ever known. And a shadow will fall upon the earth. Save the boy and lift your curse.
I've made a lot of mistakes, but Danny's the one good thing I ever did.
That being the case, we better make sure he doesn't turn out to be the Antichrist.
Come on, that looks like so much fun. It really does.
Yeah. That being the case.
Better make sure he's not the Antichrist.
Oh, dude. No, look, it does look like a hell of a lot of fun. I actually didn't hate the first film. I know I might be one of the few people
I own it. I've got it on DVD.
Yeah, as do I. And it's a damn good DVD. So that was at the time when Marvel were doing these really excellent documentaries on all of their DVDs that had like the history of the comic on there as well.
Yeah, and Sony was willing to release all this because this is one of the Sony productions. And they were really willing to just go all out on it. You know, they did the same thing with the Spider-Man films. There were all the two disc editions and the 1.5s. And Ghost Rider, I've actually got the extended edition, and they also released a plain edition. It's like, God, they just went all out on it. You know?
Yeah, I've got actually mine's in a tin.
Oh, you got the tin. I didn't get the tin.
I just got it from Easy DVD. One of their stores had it on sale before they all collapsed. And, I picked that up. So that was, look, I quite enjoyed the first one, but this looks like it's going to take it up.
That shot with him flying off the bridge, still firing all the way down. You just look at it and just go, hot. It's hotness. You know
what I mean? I mean, I think they need to do that. I mean, that's what we wanted in a Ghost Rider movie.
Absolutely. I used to read Ghost Rider a lot in the 80s. And when I heard they were making Ghost Rider, the first one, I thought this could be really fun. I wasn't sure how they were going to quite pull it off. And they didn't quite pull it off. That's the problem. But it looks like Neville Dean and Taylor have actually kind of embraced the cheese of it all, but managed to put that dark spin on it, you know? So it looks like fun. I can't wait.
No, I'm looking forward to that one.
I could be completely wrong, and it could be crap, but
I think it's going to have a few good scenes in it regardless.
Yeah, it'll have some good action stuff in it, put it that way. All right, also in movie news, you got some Scoopy stuff here. What is this?
Yeah, well, look, the Scoopy stuff was...
Hang on.
Best investigator reporting on the planet.
There you go.
There was a new website launch this week for Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man. And the link that I had here has just died on me. So
I'm bringing it up.
I've got it right here now. The new official website to The Amazing Spider-Man is now, I think it's just theamazingspiderman.com. I could be wrong about that. Hang on, I'll just double check.
Amazing Spider-Man is now online. I'm just firing it up.
So it's theamazingspiderman.com is the new website.
Yes.
Now, if you go along to that, apart from seeing a bunch of brand new photos, which are awesome, some really good action shots there. There's a great shot of just Martin Sheen and Sally Field looking a little dazed and confused, holding a skateboard. There is a shot of Emma Stone as a blonde. We get to see her as Gwen Stacy for the first time.
Great shot. I'm just looking at the site now. That action shot of him swinging and shooting.
And there's an action shot of him swinging and shooting, which looks awesome.
Amazing.
And so, look, I don't know if that's an indication of what the movie's going to... And there's another one of just him sitting there looking at his mask. Now, that's not the only thing that was on the site. Also on the site, they had a few character descriptions. which sort of give you an indication of where the story is going. And a lot of the from publicity material up until now has sort of led you to believe that we're going to see something we've never seen before. So I joked to you before, maybe, you know, this time it's a spider who's bitten by a radioactive man. has all the, what did you say? Has all the proportional strength of a
all
of a
the
human,
proportional strength has, and speed of a human being, yeah.
But still 8 arms and legs, so he's just really awkward.
And can't stick to walls.
Can't stick to walls. He's just a freak, basically. But a couple of the things that they've mentioned in on the official site now, there are two really exciting things. One of them, they've just sort of given you a bit of an indication as to what the kind of motivations of some of the characters are going to be. And for example, Peter Parker, ever since his parents disappeared 13 years ago, he has struggled to find his purpose in life. Now on the brink of unlocking the mystery about what happened to them, he must face the ultimate challenge, one that he has created within the laboratories of Oddscorp. So I think that that's adding a new element to it. It's sort of where what happened to my parents kind of thing. It was always about Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility.
This thing. Is actually sounding like they're going back to a storyline from the, I think it was the 90s where, and the cartoon Spider-Man series as well. But this is based on the, a comic book series from the 90s, I believe it was, where Peter Parker found out that his parents were actually spies. And they were
right, I remember that.
Yeah. That sounds like we're kind of skirting back into that territory.
I mean, it could be the case. I mean, I don't think it's needed, but this is going to be the, this is the other bit of news that they've revealed here, which is this is going to be the first, and I'm quoting here, in a series of movies that tells a different side of the Peter Parker story. On July 3rd, 2012, the untold story begins. And it also does mention in that thing there, put the pieces of the past together as he uncovers a secret that his father had held, a secret that will ultimately shape the destiny as Spider-Man. So look, you could be right. It could be going back to that. This is going to be the Gwen Stacy storyline. So unlike the Sam Raimi films, they're starting where the comics started, which was with Gwen Stacy as his girlfriend.
That's right. I actually read something. I read something the other day, which was a really interesting article. What was her name? The producer who died, was it Laura Ziskin? No, the female producer of Spider-Man. She recently died quite tragically. She had cancer, and she was very. It was very sudden. But she, before she died, was talking about
one of Laura Ziskin.
Laura Ziskin. One of the reasons why they rebooted. And one of the reasons why they wanted to, because a lot of people said, why are you rebooting so fast? And she actually said that originally Raimi was attached to the whole project, and they actually sent Raimi off with his writers and basically said, you know, come up with a story, blah, blah, blah. And they just couldn't get a story together. They couldn't make it work, right? And this is one of the reasons why Sam Raimi finally left, was because he basically said, there's just no film here. Right, and there was just nothing to do with this film, but the producers felt that there was something more that they wanted to do, and what they realized was they had no idea that Spider-Man was going to be the runaway hit that it was, and so they only aimed to make one film. So they made one film, and they packed as much as they could into that film, which is, of course, why he flies through high school so fast, you know, and all this sort of stuff to get him through it. When it was successful and they started to make sequels, they realized they didn't actually need to go that fast, but they'd already done it. And so they were kind of struggling to make it into a trilogy, even though because they didn't know they were going to have this success. And so they said with the reboot, one of the things they said was that they now know the popularity of this character. They can go back and they can take their time.
Yep.
And they can actually stretch it out into multiple films. They can keep him in high school for a while. They can, you know, they can actually just take their time to make it actually be a proper series rather than one rushed film and then scrambling to try and find other plots.
Yeah, look, and I think from all indications, it's going to be a great story. Look, all the creators behind it, the cast behind it is great. You've got, you know, people you wouldn't expect. You've got Dennis Leary playing Captain Stacy.
I heard that, that's cool.
And that is kind of cool. I mean, he has been playing a cop on TV for the last few years.
Firefighter. He's being a
figure of authority in Rescue Me for the last few years. They've got Martin Sheen, who I wouldn't have picked as Uncle Ben, but now that they've cast him, I'm thinking absolutely perfect.
I could actually see Martin Sheen. I'm still having kind of troubles with Sally Field.
Sally Field as Aunt May is an issue, but the looking at her in the photos here, she kind of looks like Aunt May. So
fair enough. I really like the fact they've got Reese Ifans as Kirk Connors, because after Anonymous, I would watch Reese Ifans in just about anything.
Yeah, look, I think, and we know he can play a great villain, but yeah, and I think it's great that they're using Doctor. Well, they've cast him as Dr. Kirk Connors. Now, they've not said anything about too much about.
Except the lizard. We do know the lizard is in it because
we know the lizard because there's a Pez dispenser.
Pez dispensers, exactly.
But there was also that leaked artwork as well a few weeks ago, and that looks pretty good. Mm. I think it's great that they're using him, because I would have if I was making a Spider-Man movie, if I had multi-million dollars to make a Spider-Man movie, it would either be the lizard or Scorpion.
Right.
Because they make sense in a more realistic world.
That's true.
Because Scorpion was basically, if I'm remembering things right, or maybe I'm just remembering the animated series, was J. Jonah Jameson just sort of hated Spider-Man so much that he commissioned Scorpion to go after him.
Yeah, but it all went a bit askew.
But he's basically a guy in a suit. It's just a self-made thing, which is what they did in the first two Spider-Man movies. With Green Goblin and Doc Ock.
That's right.
But by the time we got to Venom and Sandman, it just didn't make sense in that world.
It's like putting in something like Clayface into Nolan's Batman. It wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't fit the world.
No. Yeah. But look, you know, I'm excited because next year is going to be the biggest geek year for film and comic fans ever.
Yeah, look, I've definitely got to tell you that we've just come off a really good geek year for film, and I think we're going into another one. So
next summer is going to explode with goods.
Definitely. We need to move on though, Richard, because we're running late again.
Oh, what's unusual about that?
I know, it's getting become a bit of a habit. All right, so we're going to kick into our feature review. Where are we? It's this one, I believe. Oh, hello.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week. Yes, it is.
Sorry about that.
We're running slightly late and it all goes to hell, David.
No, I actually, because we were on some web pages reading those articles, I turned down the audio feed, just in case there's like inline ads or anything. I just forgot to turn it back up again.
Yeah, that'll do it.
That will do it. All right, so our pick of the week this week is Powers, written by Michael Bendis and drawn by Michael, how do you pronounce it, Oeming?
Oeming.
Now, we actually got to make a slight correction before we go any further, which is we said we were doing Volume 1. We're actually not doing all of Volume 1. We were under the impression that Volume 1 was the Who Killed Retro Girl storyline. Turns out we were wrong, and Volume 1 is actually about 30 issues long. But it's told in these bite-sized story arcs. It's like basically, you'd say it's each case is a story arc. And the first case was Who Killed Retro Girl. So that's what we're doing. Volume 1, issues 1 to 6. All right. So with all that out of the way, Richard, what did you think?
Yeah, well, I'm hooked.
Yeah, me too. I got to tell you, this was a real surprise.
It's taken me 11 years to read it, but I'm hooked.
I was actually told about this series by a person who has actually been on Film Actually many times, Celine Roberts. She told me about this series about a year and a half ago, and I went, I've got to look into that. And just for some reason, one reason or another, it's just gotten out of my head every time. And when I finally had a look at it, I finally got hold of, you know, the 1 to 6 issues. Wow. I've actually got to tell you, I've gone well beyond the reading assignment. I've actually read well past 6, and I'm probably pushing close to issue 20 at this point. It's really consistent. It's a really solid piece of writing.
Yeah, look, the thing is, I mean, this is Brian Michael Bendis is now famous for Ultimate Spider-Man and for the Avengers and for, you know, basically every other book in the Marvel Universe. Mm. At the time, going back to 2000 when this was written, he hadn't written any superhero books. He was famous for a couple of other books. I think it was AKA Goldfish, I think was the name of the book. And he had another book called it was Sam and Twitch, which was a spin-off of the Spawn universe.
Right.
But that was very much grounded in the cops. They were very much grounded as detectives.
Right.
So he was yet to write a superhero book or anything. And he actually started this thinking, well, why don't I want to write a superhero book? So he decided to write one that was from the perspective of the cops. The whole thing was as the cops would see a world populated by superheroes.
That's right. And so so what you've got in this series is you basically got a seasoned cop in this particular town and his new partner. And superheroes at this point are commonplace in this town, but there are certain laws. And I love the fact that there are laws down. There are laws governing superheroes. Like, it is actually illegal to wear a costume in this town unless you are a registered superhero and stuff like that, you know. Great little side kings. And the police actually have, what are they called, the tool for stripping their powers?
The name of it escapes me, but it nullifies the power of a superhero while they're within, you know, so they can question them safely.
So the police station has these dampers all over the place, and it basically stops the superheroes from being super during that time. It's a really, really interesting read. Now, the story behind this, I was looking it up a little bit. Apparently, Bendis, this was a completely independent comic. It's published by Image for the first volume. But it was actually Bendis and Oeming, their creation. They weren't commissioned or anything like that. It was something they wanted to do. And in volume two, they moved to Marvel. Mm. But what's interesting is that Marvel actually created a new label called Icon. And apparently Icon's modus operandi, I guess for lack of a better term, is the fact that it's all owner-created material.
Mm.
And so basically the owners have control over it and everything else. Marvel just does the publishing. And so Bendis, who was obviously very strong into the Marvel world by that point, basically brought his comic over to Icon. Makes me wonder if they actually offered him more control or more money. is what I'm wondering. But we're not up to volume two yet. So I'm very curious to see if the flavor of the comic book changes.
It'll be interesting because this is very much... it is very much a detective story, and it is very much a it feels like, and it was interesting to learn this was actually one of his influences. There was a TV show in the late 80s and early 90s called Homicide: Life on the Streets.
Mm.
And one of the things he read was a book called Homicide: A Year on the Killing Streets, which was what that series was based on.
Right.
And it was basically a procedural. It was a bit of a groundbreaking TV show because you never necessarily solved the crime, like, you know, unlike, you know, Law and Order today, where you get, you know, a case at the start of the episode, there's the investigation, there's the trial, and then it's all solved by the end of the episode. This, it went on over the case of a year, over the course of a year. And in the case of the first season, the very first case was never solved.
Oh,
and that
really?
Sort of haunts people forever. And in this, you kind of get the same sort of thing. You get these cases that are drawn out over several, you know, a number of issues and over a long period of time.
Mm.
And this is what I really like about it. Okay, there's two things I'm going to say up front I love about this. One is the writing and the dialogue.
Yes.
It's amazing. It's really, really great. And we'll talk about this a bit more in depth. But the dialogue is spot on. Two, Michael Oeming's artwork. And I'd been familiar with his work. Did you ever read any of the Kevin Smith comics?
Which ones?
He did. As far as I know, he did one of the Blunt Man and Chronic ones.
Oh no, I never read them.
He did. He may have done. I could be wrong. He may have done some of the Clerks ones as well. But he certainly did the Blunt Man and Chronic series. So I knew him through that. But he's done a lot of stuff. He's actually a writer and an artist as well, but his artwork in this is great because there are panels that look seemingly identical one after the other, and there are other ones where there are like about two dozen panels on the page, and it's just a short, fast dialogue using every single one of those panels. It's got like a building, and you're seeing what's happening going on inside the building, and every panel is a different scene inside that building.
Yeah, yeah. Throwback old detective movie dialogue as well, which I love. It's mm-hmm. a sharp staccato dialogue between them. It's sensational, and I love the sense of humor in it. There's one now. I'm trying to remember because I've read ahead, so I'm trying to remember if it's in the retro girl thing. I think it is, where he basically tells his new partner, this cute little blonde girl with the midriff, to go away. Basically, I think it's near the end where he says, "I can't do this anymore." I think it's after she hits him, actually.
Yeah.
And she goes, "Are you kidding?" She goes, "I'm smart. I'm this. I'm that. And I look good with them. I look good in these little midriff tops."
Yeah.
I just love the fact that they're completely self-referential all the way through it, you know?
I love this other thing, too, where they're talking about something, and then in the background there's this costume fight going on. They crash into a building, there's a brief explosion, and they stop, they look at it, and they turn back, and they just carry on in their conversation. Yes.
it's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very clever that way. I love it. And I love the fact that, as a detective story, it's also really intriguing. It's like they give you clues to the crime. I guess we should talk about what the crime is for this first six issues.
Let's do a recap. Let's do a synopsis.
So basically, the synopsis is that in this particular one, now we're just going to get their names again. What are their names? He's Walker, and she's Pilgrim. That's right. So that's right. Detective Walker is given a new partner, Pilgrim, to basically break in. And they go through the first issue trying to get along but having a lot of problems with this and so forth. But the issue ends with them being called to a crime scene and they can't believe what they're seeing. But Retro Girl, who's basically Supergirl, thinly veiled Supergirl, her body's just basically been left in the road. She's dead. And the next five issues are about their investigation as to who could, A, possibly have done it and why. And their investigation through it. And I love the fact that throughout this entire investigation, there's all these little hints all the way through it. The graffiti on the walls, the things that people say, and so forth. So it's a really clever detective story. Mm. And if you are actually paying attention, the hints are there.
And what I really love about this, too, is that, you know, what we'd normally have in a series like this is, like, you'd get to the end of issue one and it says Retro Girl is dead. And now your first thing is, who's Retro Girl? What's she doing? Now, rather than stopping the whole thing to a grinding halt and giving you a retro on Retro Girl, it actually continues the story in the top part of the page. And then all along the bottom of issue two, you get this news bulletin. And this kind of like little documentary on the history of her greatest exploits. And I love that. And you know what? This reminded me a lot of, and without sort of comparing it and overblowing it too much, but this has very much got a Watchmen vibe to it.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. It's probably not as...
As grandiose.
As grandiose, and it's probably not, in many ways, not as well drawn as Watchmen.
Oh, look, no, I'm not okay. I don't want to say...
But you know what? I think you're right about the writing, though. I think the writing is easily as sharp as Alan Moore's writing. I think this is Bendis's best work.
This is Bendis's best work, I think, but it's some of his most wordiest work as well.
Yeah.
As we said, some of that that dialogue is really short and sharp, but there's a lot of it. And I think they actually, I'm pretty sure I remember reading this somewhere that they said they intentionally made the panels quite small, just so they could.
Fit in the dialogue
with as much. So, yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. And there are some pages when, certainly around issues five or six, I think, where it's just these full pages where there's like one or two panels and then just a chunk of writing all down the left-hand side or all down the right-hand side.
And the panel layouts are actually in some of the panels. It's challenging because some of them you're sitting there going, what direction am I going on these panels? Mm. You know what I mean? Because they actually do flow, but you've got to really pay attention because he'll put, you know, 20 panels on a page. You know?
And this is another reason why I'll compare it to Watchmen or anything that Alan Moore's done along those lines. One, it's an investigation into the death of a superhero. Mm. Two, it's using the comic book format in a way that could only – sorry, it's telling a story in a way that can only be done in a comic book format. Now, Watchmen proved to be a difficult movie to make, and I think they made an okay film out of it. But because it was doing things in there that you couldn't possibly ever replicate in any other medium except for comics. And this is what I was saying, this thing about having two stories running simultaneously all throughout issue two. Throughout issue three, it goes back to a far more traditional story, but then it's, you know, there's so much dialogue there. There's one thing where they meet this character who I think is a bit of a thinly veiled Tony Stark figure.
Oh, yes, with the red armor, yes.
With the red armor. And there's, except he's a much older character, but he's a bit of a womanizer.
I love the fact that they've given him the hippie ponytail and stuff.
yeah, exactly right. But that's kind of like this massive grid that goes over two pages. And it's kind of like you're suddenly reading left to right over the two pages, but there's a panel that just runs right along the top,
mm-hmm.
and then the next page goes back to, and then you're suddenly reading from top to bottom, and then you're back to a more traditional page, and then but every page there's something interesting with the shape of the the panels, and then some pages it's just one big splash thing. In that same issue, it's basically got there's a conversation going on between Walker and Pilgrim, where they've basically this is just after you referred to it before, where she's just sucker punched him.
Yeah, which we should explain that there's actually a minor subplot, because Walker seems to know all the superheroes, and there seems to be this running thing where Pilgrim is basically wondering whether or not Walker is a superhero, whether he is a power, as they refer to them, and. The subplot that kind of comes out throughout this issue is that he used to be, but for some reason, out of nowhere, he lost his powers. Yeah. And the only way that he could continue to do good was to be a cop. And so he became a cop. But he still has those ties to that superhero world. Anyway, continue with the sucker punching, because that's a great scene.
Yeah, and they sort of go on, but this is a sort of series of things. And it's just like there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 panels across. And these thin strips of panels, and it's just kind of like saying, and if you ever sucker punch me again, same scene, no dialogue. I think you owe me one, don't you? Same scene, no dialogue. One what? And then it goes on to a great subplot involving a kid.
Yeah.
But it's just this. It's just this. Like he almost uses. There are some pages where Oeming and Bendis have decided to just use almost identical panels, almost going all the way through it. But there's just enough subtle differences so that you focus on the dialogue in that particular case. But when they want you to focus on the artwork, they give you a page like in that same issue. I think I mentioned it before. It's basically a building. And the back of the building has almost got the panels projected onto it, which I really loved. I just really loved the look of this thing because it had that kind of noirish feel to it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was something very unique and something that just drew you in at the same time. And as you said, there were so many clues in there, both visual and written as well. No, I really like this.
Really,
this
I also really love the coroner character.
Who actually
shows up all the way through the series. He's always there coming onto the crime scenes and so forth. But I love the fact there's that sequence when they first talk to him and he's hyperactive.
Oh, he just hasn't had his coffee. Yeah.
And they give him his coffee and he just comes to a halt. And it's like, I needed that. Because he's complaining about the fact that he's got Retro Girl on the table, but they can't do an autopsy because they can't even figure out how to cut her skin.
And the next time they come back to him, he's got the blowtorch out.
Yes.
He's like, you know, I love that subplot because it is kind of like one of those things like, okay, well, if a superhero died and somehow murdered, how do you even start investigating that? We had no point of reference for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what he keeps saying throughout it. We have no point of reference. And he's a really great character because he kind of, you know, they're off investigating and meeting all these super characters throughout it. And then they come back to the office and it's kind of like, well, we've still got paperwork to do. We've still got to cut this body up if I'm going to get anywhere.
And there's actually a line, I think, further on. I think it's probably like issue 12 or 13 where he says something along the lines of, you know, there's no precedence for this. And Pilgrim just looking and goes, you say that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
this frustration over the fact that these powers are just there. I mean, there's no way of knowing what's going on with them, you know?
You know what I really love about this story too, and I love the way it's constructed, because if we go back to issue one, you have for the first half dozen pages, almost dozen pages, I guess, your story is about just introducing Walker as a hero cop, basically, who saves a little girl from a guy with a jetpack.
Yeah,
and the little girl becomes important throughout it, although she seems like. The story starts in this very traditional, almost sitcomish sort of way, where he's sort of forced to look after this little girl that he's rescued, because nobody else will have her at that time. And it almost looks as though it's going to be big tough cop is saddled with a little girl. Look at the, you know, hilarity ensues. It's got all the setup for that. And then he's introduced to his new partner at the same time. You know, it almost reads like Kindergarten Cop for those first 20 pages.
Including the punchline of the guy with the jetpack who shoots out of the roof of the building to escape. And then he circles around and he comes flying down and his jetpack's failing. He's going, ow, 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 ow. Yeah.
And then, you know, all the guns just pointing out. You know, okay, it's great. And it sets it up that way. And then that first issue ends with Retro Girl's body splayed against the school.
And I even love the way that they do that with them pulling up to the crime scene. And as they approach it, it's the frames are on them and they're saying, could be a lookalike. It isn't. He goes, but how do you know? He goes, I just know. And then we cut to the body. And it's like they're going, you know, who is it? Who could it be? And then, of course, we spin around and there's this superhero just laid in her own pool of blood. You know, I love the little touches as well. Things like the on that because it's a full page panel. I love the fact that there's the spray paint on the wall, but then somebody's actually spray painted on top of that.
Yeah,
and with the police tape is actually held up by a Coke can.
I'm just looking at it now. It's a really nice.
It's a great, lovely little pieces of detail in there. You know, and you sit there and it's great. It's great stuff. Look, this is a really recommended series. As I say, I've gone on a little bit further, and there's some great stories in here. The one I'm actually in the middle of, further on into volume one at the moment, where it's almost like a Justice League, like this team of superheroes, and one of them has been killed. And it's like it's almost like who in the team could have done it,
right?
And all this sort of stuff. So that's very interesting. And there's actually a very, very small story arc in it called Groupies, which is a great set of episodes where this character called the Olympia, who's this huge, big, godlike creature, godlike man, I should say, all blonde and buff and everything else, is found dead in a seedy hotel room, but no signs of struggle or marks on him or anything like that. And they're trying to figure out what killed Olympia. And it's the whole arc is all about the fact that there's these girls who are superhero groupies and they go around seducing and sleeping with superheroes. And so they keep bringing them in for questioning. And of course this is driving Pilgrim crazy because they're these bimbos, you know, and all this is, it's very clever. And there's one line and I can't go into it because we don't carry an explicit tag, but there's the hints are that she actually says that one of the groupies actually says, yeah, you know, because we do it for the thrill and blah, blah. One of my friends went down on one of these superheroes and the way she words it, she goes, you know, she didn't like to waste anything. and she goes, but then she could fly for 6 hours. And you sit there and go, oh, wow. and the reactions of the detectives is also, oh, wow. You know, it's like, what the hell? You
know? Nice.
No, it's really good. It's a really great series, and I'm really looking forward to just continuing on with it because it's so good. I can't believe I waited this long.
No, look, it's a terrific series, and I've always liked Bendis's writing, but I think, you know, removed from the big name costumes and capes, it you can really concentrate on his writing and the artwork, and they're both top notch.
Absolutely, and that's a very important factor here, which is he's no longer constrained by rules of whatever the Avengers or whatever he might be working on, because. I mean, there are rules. There are going to be restrictions that he has to work with in that situation. These are characters who have years and years of history. And with powers, he can basically just cut loose. He can write anything he wants here, and he can tell the stories that he wants
to
tell.
And he does.
And he does. And it's remarkable to see. I'm outside of the superhero arena, outside of Marvel, I'm not really familiar with much of Bendis's work. And so this is really an eye-opener for me.
Yeah, look, I'd not read a lot of his novel. I mean, I was probably introduced to Bendis shortly after this time, where he would have when he started Ultimate Spider-Man,
right?
Which would have been back. I wonder when that was. That was 2002. So this is 2 years after Power started.
Right.
And so obviously he'd made the move over to Marvel at that stage. But, you know, look, I'd not really seen any of his earlier work until now. And I think I'd like to go back and check out things like AKA Goldfish, which his previous work is. Or was it previous work? Or maybe it was around the same time. I can't remember. It was just sort of, he did it for Image. He cites, you know, Frank Miller and Alan Moore as influences, as his comic book writer influences. You can kind of see that in there. But he said he also draws from people like David Mamet and Richard Price and Aaron Sorkin.
I can see the Sorkin in there, absolutely. Yeah. I also have to point out that there's an issue, hold on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, issue 7, so the next, very next issue, actually, after this, this series is so meta that in issue 7, the guest star of the comic book is Warren Ellis. and now, I'm not talking about guest star artist or anything, he's actually a character in the book. And basically, he's a graphic novelist, Warren Ellis, who is come to the police station because he wants to go on a ride-along because he's writing a new graphic novel. That's how meta this book is.
Well, actually, one of the things throughout the thing, throughout the series, is the guest stars, and sometimes there are other comic book characters, and as you pointed out, sometimes they're comic book creators. even in this first arc, you notice there's a few characters. One of them was Madman.
Yes.
Turned up there, and Madman, it was just in the lineup of heroes that when they were questioning a whole lot of people going through. Now, Madman's a book I would love to come back and have a look at in years to come. I mean, he's another one that sort of went from Image Comics to Oni Press to Dark Horse Comics to AAA Pop over the years. And he's kind of had a similar voyage of sort of indie to mainstream and kind of survived that. As well, very unconventional superhero by originally created by a guy named Mike Allred.
Right.
And I think he's someone we should come back and have a look at later. Much more pop art style, much more very different book. Cool. to this one. But look, you know, really, this is the first. I guess this is the first indie we've done, isn't it?
Second, Walking Dead was probably.
The first. Walking Dead. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot about last week.
Which, funnily enough, is also Image.
But there you go.
So we're talking about the same company here. So this is a company that likes to take a few risks.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose I don't think of it. It's weird because Walking Dead has now become such a phenomenon.
It's hard to remember that it was an indie.
It is an indie book that has been running for 90-odd issues, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you look at Powers, it's been running for, what, 67 issues, something like that? You forget that these little books are essentially little books.
Yeah.
Because they've just been going for so long. Anyway, I can't recommend it enough, and I'm just going to keep powering through it, forgive the pun, because it is just a terrific read. I find myself really just going along with these characters. I really love the dialogue. I think the dialogue is one of the things that really... And once again, it's that Sorkin influence. You know I'm a big Sorkin fan. When you say that...
I know you're a big Sorkin fan.
And you say that it's influenced by Sorkin, and you go, you can see that, you know?
I've not been the biggest Sorkin fan in the world, but someone this week tried to convince me to go back and watch all of West Wing.
At least season one.
They showed me a clip from a later season that has convinced me. And if I just say, babies come with hats... and I thought that's damn good writing.
The series Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip basically failed after one season, but I gotta tell you, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved the writing in it. I loved the characters in it. The biggest problem with that is it was about a comedy show, and whenever they showed the comedy spets, it wasn't actually that funny.
Right.
So it kind of stretched the realms of believability. But all the behind the scenes stuff, which is what the series was really about, was fantastic. And it was just amazingly written, and that's what Sorkin does. Sorkin's got a knack for dialogue, but that's a whole different story. We're here about Powers, but
that's right.
You can definitely see
not Aaron. Well, stay tuned for behind Aaron Sorkin,
but you can definitely see that influence by you saying that the dialogue is that kind of crackerjack backwards and forwards dialogue, which is very much a Sorkin influence.
It's got that mixed with the procedural stuff of things like Homicide. And I think it's you've got a winning combination. You know, you throw superheroes into the mix and you've got a winning combination. I think this would probably make a really good TV series if they're going to do something with
and
it.
It's funny you mention that because it has been picked up as a TV series.
Well, there you go.
And I'm really looking forward to it. Now, we haven't heard anything lately, but it was about 12 months ago they actually said it has been picked up and it's going to pilot. So we wait with bated breath. And in fact, while we're talking, I'm going to bring up IMDb and see if there's any latest news on this.
Well, see, because I think, you know, something like this, which is procedural based, you're not going to get the value out of it if you made it into a movie. You know, maybe the retro girl arc would make a good film, because I think it does have the potential there to make a great film. But I think as a series, this is something where you get to know the characters. And as we said with Walking Dead last week, you get to know the characters and actually not only like them, but love them very quickly.
Okay, here you go. Powers has been made. It just hasn't been released yet. It's actually listed as a 2011 production. Lucy Punch is playing Dina Pilgrim. Bailey Madison is Callista. She's a wonderful little actress. Vinnie Jones as Johnny Royale. The hoodlum that is got the lawsuit against them. Jason Patrick is Christian Walker. I don't know if he's quite right. He's not big enough.
No.
Who else is in there? Charles S. Dutton as Captain Cross. Anybody else?
I'm not even sure I see Lucy Punch as Dina Pilgrim.
I'm just going to bring up a picture of her for a second. I love her. She was the weirdo redhead teacher in
Bad Teacher. One of the good elements.
The only thing that was good about that movie.
But she was, I don't know. I've only ever seen her playing crazy. So
I don't know. I would actually like to see her with the short hair and everything, see if she could actually pull it
mind
off.
Mind you, she was in... No, she's great. She was in Hot Fuzz as well. No, I've seen her. She's an English actress.
Yes, yes.
She's... No, I've seen her in heaps of stuff. No, and I do like it. No, we like Lucy Punch.
Oh, we like Lucy Punch.
Yes,
okay.
cast Lucy Punch.
Okay, I think Jason Patrick is not quite right, though, because he's not big enough. Do you know who I would have cast as Walker, as much as this is weird? I would have cast... what's his name? Whose Rules? He was in Seinfeld. He played the tick.
Yes, the guy that played the tick.
Warburton,
yeah.
Yes, I would have cast him.
Yeah, no, Warburton would have been perfect. Yeah.
Absolutely, he would have been fantastic. Anyway, so we look forward to seeing this. Now, who's the production company on this? Where is this going to show?
It's FX.
FX Productions. Sony Pictures Television, FX Productions. So if it's showing on the FX channel, it's going to be a bit edgy.
Yes.
Because it won't have quite the swearing that the book has, because FX is still a little bit network, but it is a lot edgier.
Yeah, it says, according to the this article here, which is from TV Line, they say that they hope to develop the show into a gritty crime drama, much like FX hopes to develop the show into a gritty crime drama, much like its own The Shield or David Fincher's Seven or Zodiac.
Oh, yeah.
So if they go for that vibe, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Now, we've also got Retro Girl, Carly Fulks.
Well, she's not going to last terribly long.
Well, no, they'll be doing flashbacks.
That's true.
They'll do flashbacks.
She had a modeling career.
Best known as being the T-Mobile girl in a series of commercials. Okay, so she's just a visual.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, she's going to be a visual. What can we tell you? It says here, best known as the T-Mobile girl in a series of commercials for a company in which she wore pink and white dress.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
And pitching her as the Princess Di of the Powers world when they were describing the her role in the Powers TV show. So... interesting. Like, I mean, I think one of the things I didn't mention before is that the characters, Retro Girl's real name is Janice.
Yes.
Apparently Bendis based a lot of the story arcs on the death of famous people and Janis Joplin. He was looking at one of the other things he looked at in addition to Homicide was one of the biographies of Janis Joplin's life and death. So I think you're finding that too there. He sort of used that real world cult of the celebrity and what that actually means when one of them dies and someone has to investigate it and putting that into the superhero world where the celebrity is almost a god. And I think, I mean, that's what I think would make a great TV series. So look, as we've said already, terrific series, highly recommended.
I'd like to point out as well that the pilot for the TV series is directed by Michael Dinner, and he's actually a director who's directed episodes of Law and Order and Justified, which is an amazing police procedural on at the moment. And The Beast, which is another crime drama, and Sons of Anarchy. And where are we? Grey's Anatomy. So he's got a bit of the drama in him as well. Yeah, look, the guy's, he's a veteran TV director.
Let's not forget the Wonder Years.
Oh, and the Wonder Years. Come on, I love the Wonder Years. This guy's got a bit of chops on him. Although he did work on the new Bionic Woman series, which was terrible. But, you know.
Yeah, look, everyone's got one dud in them.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we should wrap this puppy up, shouldn't we?
We should. It's almost Christmas, and we need to get those puppies under the tree so they can be returned 3 weeks later unwanted.
Fair enough. And for Christmas, Richard, what are we reading?
For Christmas, well, I mean, we were so lucky this year. We just started the show, and DC put out Batman Noel just in time for our Christmas show.
Absolutely.
Thank you, DC.
Thank you. Yeah, very much so. Now, this is also written by Brian Azzarello, who wrote that Joker book that I just recently read.
That's right. So I'm going to read both of those for next week.
Well, I've already read Joker, so that's good. We'll do both. What the hell?
I'm going to read that just so I can compare them, because I think they'll probably be set in a very similar world.
I think they probably will. And so Noel, I'm very much looking forward to, and we will do that next week. Now, just a very quick update, just to remind people, this episode is not going out on the Film Actually feed anymore. So I remember last week we said that was the last week. So this episode will be going out on Geek Actually and on the Behind the Panels episode feed. So if you are only subscribing to this through either Geek Actually or Film Actually, it's time to go and subscribe through Behind the Panels. And
that's right. So just search for us on iTunes and you'll find us that way.
Although we're telling people this, and if they're listening to the, if they're subscribed to the wrong channel, then they're not listening to this anyway. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
I'm just putting it out there for people. We also want to put out that our Facebook now has a domain name. So our Facebook is actually facebook.com/behindthepanels, all one word. So you can go there and join the community and throw some stuff out there. And thirdly, the last piece of news that we should throw out is, because it's the holiday silly season, episodes won't be quite as regular for the next couple of weeks. They may be a couple of days late or, you know, early or whatever. It's because we're all trying to find time to record at the moment. So just be aware that if an episode isn't out on Sunday as expected, it is coming. It's just running.
And it's Christmas, man.
It's Christmas. Cut us some slack.
Come on. We work hard for you people.
All right. So, and besides, if you get on my case too much.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Absolutely.
I knew it was coming.
Yes.
All right. It is time for us to head off. Richard, where can people find out more about you on the internet? My little
pond hopper.
Yes, my little pond hopper. Where can they find out about you?
Oh, God. I'm going to have to come over there and take that soundboard away from you.
It'll never happen because it goes.
Time for a disappearing act, boys.
It certainly is. You can find me on therealbits.com. That's RELBits.com. That's a film website mostly, but I throw up a bit of comics news and TV news as well. And you can find me on Twitter talking about absolutely everything that pops into my head at DVDBits.
Fantastic. And you can find out everything you want to find out about me by just heading over to geekactually.com. And there is a follow us link on the side of the page on the front page, which has got everything. Twitters, Facebooks, everything. So you can just find me there. That's the easiest way to find me. All right. If you want to respond to this show or anything about these shows, you can send your feedback to comics@geekactually.com. And we've already given you that Facebook page. You can also leave us a voicemail at 02-801-13167. We would love to play your voice on air. Now, Richard, I believe we got some feedback that we have forgotten about.
Oh, we did. We got some on. We've had some feedback on the Facebook page. We've also had some feedback from our guest last week.
Absolutely. So I thought I would read that for us very quickly. It's actually on iTunes. And just a reminder that if you want to leave us some feedback on iTunes, you are welcome to. We want all the feedback we can. But Popcorn Junkies on our iTunes has actually left us 5 stars and says, best comic podcast on the net. Woohoo!
That's true.
It says, Behind the Panels is a great comic book podcast for anyone who loves comics or has been out of the game and wants to know what's good. Such great discussions and reading selections. Richard and David have a wide knowledge of the comic book world and have a lot of fun doing it. By the Hammer of Thor, subscribe now. You won't regret it.
Oh, did you feel your head swelling then, David?
I did. I feel like I'm not going to be able to get out of my studio today. It's going to run into the door frame as I'm walking out.
We've been really pleased with the response to the show so far. So, look, you know, if you do like the show, please leave a comment on iTunes or on our Facebook page and tell your friends. Spread it around.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There you go.
We promise we'll get David to tone down the soundboard, though.
No, we won't. I'm adding more and more stuff to it every day.
I want a soundboard.
we got to get you one. We got to have dueling soundboards.
Yeah. I want to do this.
You can join the fun with me. What are you pointing to? Sorry, my son is in the studio with me. He's pointing at the soundboard. What, this one? What are you pointing to? Oh, he wants this one again. He likes this one.
Yes.
That's very funny. By the way, for those who are wondering where that comes from, it comes from the Howard the Duck movie, which was based on a comic book. So there you go.
That's true.
So that's why we have it. All right, Richard, we're going to get out of here. Thank you so much for joining me one more time.
It's been a pleasure as always, David.
As always. And I look forward to talking about Batman Noel next week.
Good to get back to some capes.
Just for a week, and then we'll find something else to read.
Oh, I've got a few things in mind, but we'll see where we go from there.
Now, just to let our listeners know as well, we are going to post a list of all the reading stuff up in advance, so you guys can actually read ahead if you want to, and catch up and so forth. So we will get that list up on probably our Facebook page.
Yeah, I think it'd be the best page. Look, we've got a bunch of stuff that we want to read, so we're going to schedule those out and just stick them up. So as David said, if you want to read ahead because you're keen, if you want to suggest stuff for us to read, please do same things at comics@geekactually.com or on the Facebook page.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds like a plan. Richard, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.